It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day to be a neighbor. Won't you be mine? Welcome back to Cellar Jams, Jammies. Today we have my friend Kevin Reiser, who is a successful brand builder, had a podcast of his own called Private Label Movement. That was one of the top business podcasts for a while, had a logistics business, is a successful speaker, and has actually owned multiple brands beyond his first brand. So the dude is a straight up legend and also a mentor of mine going back 4 years. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this episode. Stick around until the end of it because we start getting pretty philosophical in this one. So if you're the tactical type, this might not be the episode for you. But if you need a mindset shift, this is going to totally blow your mind because Kevin reveals not only the ups but the downs and the critical toughness of attitude and mindset that's necessary for anyone to succeed in this world, in this domain that we're in. So enjoy the episode, guys. Listen all the way through to the end, and I'll see you there. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Cellar Jams. This episode, I have my actual friend, Kevin Reiser, on the podcast. And I say actual friend because we tend to call everybody our friend, even if we've never actually met in this industry. But Kevin and I have actually known each other for I didn't actually think about that until I just said it just now, but 4 years, Kev.
Yeah.
We've known each other, which is wild. Kevin was the moderator and founder of a private mastermind group that I joined and was actually a mentor to me early on when I started my brand. And so Kevin and I have known each other. I was on his podcast, Private Label Movement, which is actually still going on, but Kevin's no longer running it. But Kevin has such an inspiring story. He speaks about your why and all kinds of topics about brand building at conferences around the world. He's grown a successful brand himself. He's had multiple different businesses in content, branding, and I know speaking and even logistics. You've dabbled in almost everything, Kev. So welcome to the podcast, man.
Chris, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So actually, before we started, Kevin and I had to cut ourselves off because we were sharing with one another the challenges that we were encountering in our business. And one of the things I actually wanted to say while we were live was some of the concepts that we spoke in there, you don't really hear in our private conversation, you don't really hear in podcasts like this because everyone's always killing it. And and with, especially with Judo Launch, since it's funded through venture capital, I've had to get into the habit of always spinning everything to be awesome all the time and always like only showing the best side, even if most of the other sides are ugly and warty. I have to find the one side that's really of the beast that's like really beautiful. And that could be, you know, there could be, you know, all kinds of ugly warts all over the thing, but you have to always paint it in the best picture. And that kind of can keep you from really sharing deeply and connecting with people and learning from people with new DNA. And so that's kind of, I wanted to set the tone with that so that we could, as you share your story with us, that we keep that in mind and, you know, share some of the challenges and tribulations as well as the successes through this.
Absolutely.
Cool. So yeah, take us maybe back to the beginning before, right in the moment. We won't go all the way to the beginning of time because sometimes people start, well.
That's good because my brain hurts from going back that far.
Yeah, exactly. No, we get when I say, tell us your story. You know, sometimes people will go, well, I was born in 1975. Yeah, exactly. So, but take us back to the moment or the period of time before you started your first business and yeah, we'll go absolutely. From there.
Sounds good, man. So yeah, it was the spring of 2014. So just over 5 years ago, and I had just relocated to Dallas, Texas, and was looking to make a change career-wise because I just wasn't happy and I knew I wasn't in the right place. I had a history career-wise of radio and television and marketing and just lots of different things. In fact, I had never had a job for more than 2 or 3 years at a time, the same job with the same company. So I kind of bounced around a lot. And at that moment, I was a consultant in the healthcare space and was working 80-hour weeks and made okay money. But there was a problem. There was a big problem in addition to just not loving what I was doing. And that was that our largest client, which accounted for about half of our revenue, was 12 weeks behind on their invoices.
Oh, boy.
So we weren't getting paid. And, you know, I was struggling at that point, not just to make ends meet, but to pay all of our staff and to keep our bills paid. And so I knew I had to make a change. And I had heard about this prospect of selling things online. I thought it was kind of intriguing and different. And I went out and started reading about it and kind of soaking up knowledge. And the first thing that I dipped my toe in was retail arbitrage. So I read a book on retail arbitrage. I went out to Costco that same day and went to Costco and Target and a couple of other stores and hit up the clearance aisle and loaded up about $500 worth of stuff in my car. And I'll never forget, I drove home and I spent the next 8 or 10 hours registering all these products on Amazon and listing them and printing off shipping labels and boxing everything up and sending it off to Amazon.
Oh, dude, that is really the dregs. That's really like the bottom of the barrel when it comes to any kind of, you know, run business online. I can't imagine a job that's more tedious than retail arbitrage. That's a tough one.
So I knew right away that that was not for me, right? My time span in retail arbitrage was all of 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I waited, you know, several months. I think it was almost a year before all of those items that I bought that first day had completely sold.
Oh, brutal.
And I knew that wasn't for me, but my interest was piqued.
Mm-hmm.
And a few weeks later, I got an email. And if you're like me, at that time, I was on so many different email lists.
Oh, yeah.
For, you know, entrepreneurship and different ways to make money that most of them didn't even get open. Most of them went straight to the trash. But this particular day, I happened to get an email and it was touting a course about selling products on Amazon. And I don't know what it was about that resonated with me. It could have been that I was somewhat of an early adapter to Amazon. I shopped there frequently, or I don't know what it was, but something resonated and made sense with me. So I literally maxed out a couple of credit cards and took a course. And a few months later, went to a conference in Las Vegas. And, you know, things at that time were really different from me. I was, you know, not in a great place financially. In fact, I love to joke about the fact that this conference was held at the Venetian, one of the really nice hotels there on the Strip in Vegas. But I looked at the price for hotel rooms at the Venetian and I was like, oh, hell no. I'm not staying there. So I actually stayed at Harrah's next door because it was about $60 a night. And I remember thinking to myself, Chris, you know, it's right next door. I can just walk to the conference.
Oh, but you didn't know Vegas.
Well, I didn't know Vegas like I know
yeah, yeah.
And, you know, at least a dozen times in the 5 years since. And now I know that just because it's next door doesn't mean it's, you know, easily walked.
By far. How many bridges and walking overpasses and tunnels and whatever else did you have to take to get there?
So that was the start. And to be honest, I thought that it would be a hobby, something that would be fun to do. Hopefully it would supplement my income. Never in a million years could I have imagined that just 6 months into it, I'd leave my consulting career and focus full time on launching products and brands and selling things online. Never would I have imagined that I would have started a podcast a year or a year and a half after that and had the opportunity to talk to over 200 sellers and people across the globe. And as you mentioned, speak to audiences all over the world. So it's been an amazing ride and one that I'm so grateful for.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I like to hear stories like that. I think I knew about the retail arbitrage thing, but I didn't remember it. So I'm glad that you mentioned that because I've heard you tell your story on podcasts and on stage a number of times, but I didn't remember the retail arbitrage part. But
yeah,
I actually like hearing that one of the turning points was you reading this email. Because one of the things that I've thought about a lot recently is the radical shift in the way we get information and educate ourselves now.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it was only, what, a decade or two ago where the only way to get education that related to your success in life was college. Literally the only way.
Right.
I mean, that you could go to trade school maybe, but, you know, up until, I don't know, maybe two decades ago, at max, there wasn't any other path. Like, really, you could figure it out yourself. You could read books maybe, but now there's just a plethora of courses, free content on podcasts and, you know, webinars and online courses and YouTube that you can actually learn almost everything you need in order to succeed in, with these different business models. And it makes me think about how education is kind of being disrupted and we're on like the ground floor of that.
Right. Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. And of course I'm biased because I never completed my degree. I dropped out of college after my sophomore year. At the time I was working in radio and television, and it wasn't that I didn't see value in higher education. It was that I didn't see value that was going to directly give me a leg up. You know, I was already working in the industry and had opportunities to kind of accelerate the growth of my career at a faster rate, actually by leaving school, mm-hmm. by staying in. And, you know, it's certainly not the path for everyone. And, you know, a traditional kind of formal education still makes sense for a lot of people mm-hmm. in a lot of different careers. But I actually think in terms of entrepreneurship, that self-learning and doing some of the things that you talked about, whether it's conferences or books or, you know, masterminds or just getting out there and trying. Yep. I mean, we live in a world where for so little investment, you can get out there and actually test the waters and bring a product to market or come up with something and sell it, leave the cave and kill something and drag it back home, that, you know, that wasn't possible 20 or 30 or certainly not 50 or right. 100 years ago. And so I think we're living in, you know, one of the biggest, most fundamental shifts that we've had in our history on this planet. And it's an exciting time. And I love to hear young people in particular say that they're thinking about going into business and whether they choose to do that with the help and aid of a degree or not, I think is
yeah, just fine. I couldn't agree more with that. And I definitely think that it's a mindset shift that once you kind of experience it, it stays with you forever. Because you were kind of like pushed onto this path of you're always taken care of by someone. It's like in the very beginning, you're in kindergarten and the teacher is telling you what homework assignments to do and what their due date is. And then you're in middle school, and high school is the same thing. You have to study for this test and get a grade above this score to get into whatever, the next class or college or whatever. And then college is the same. And then you have to have an internship at the type of company that you want to work at. And then you need to present yourself well enough to get hired. And then you have KPIs that you need to meet. And somebody's telling you what to do all the way until you die. And we kind of get trained to like wait for someone to tell us what the next step is to do. But there's a critical mindset change that takes place when you make the choice or decide that you want to pursue a business yourself or be an entrepreneur. And that's, there's no one that can tell you what to do. There's really no direct path either. Like you said, the best thing to do is leave that cave that you've been in, walk out into the jungle and start hunting. And you're not going to bring down right. a wild, you know, a woolly mammoth. You're probably going to get like a little squirrel with barely any meat on it, and you're going to eat it, and it's going to taste really yes. shitty. And then that's okay, because you're going to learn how to hunt. And like there, you could read all the books about the jungle that you want, and all the books about, you know, crafting bow and arrows, and, you know, making the sharpest knife, and where all the woolly mammoths stay. But until you go out hunting, you're never going to really know viscerally how to do it. And it's just, it's drastically different than the path most of us are on, and most of us get kind of trained to follow.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And, you know, I think that for me, that was probably one of the most irritating things. You know, I was an awful employee. I mean, and it's not that I didn't do my job. Usually I did my job very, very well and would get a lot of praise and a lot of accolades from my superiors. But the reason I was an awful employee is that I always wanted to do more. I always wanted to color outside the lines. I always wanted to grow the business in aggressive and unconventional ways. Mm. I always wanted to cut out bureaucracy and redundancy and look for ways to cut corners, not just because I was lazy, but because I saw easy ways for improvement. And in the corporate world, you know, that's the definition of a horrible employee. And so one of the things that drove me towards entrepreneurship was wanting the freedom to be able to kind of do things on my own terms. And, you know, certainly with that comes a lot of pros and definitely some cons as well.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, no doubt. All right. So tell us a little more, dig in a little bit about the early days of the brand that you started after you went to the course. How did that go? Because obviously you saw some enough growth to leave this corporate job that you had. How did that play out?
It was really pretty simple in the beginning. And in fact, some days I wish I could go back to it being so simple.
But, oh, I hear you. I hear you 100%, dude. Yep.
I was told to pick a product and I was given criteria to look for. And certainly those criteria have changed. But in essence, to go out into the marketplace and find something that's already being sold and put your spin on it and differentiate how you can, and then find a manufacturer and bring it to market. So that's what I did and started with one product. And I'll never forget, it was about 400 units or so, 400 or 500 units. And I'll never forget the first day that I sold 5 units, right? And I thought to myself, okay, we've got 5 units that we sold today and a profit of around $5 per unit. This is amazing. And I'm jumping up and down. I'm so excited. And I started thinking to myself, okay, so that's $25 that I made today. I can't live off of $25. But if I did this either with 10 other products, well, then that would be $500, and I could, or that would be $250, and I could probably live off of $250. Or if I, you know, could get to 10 units or 20 units a day, I definitely saw the potential. So I made the decision just a few months in. I think I launched a second product at that point. I just knew that dividing my attention between my existing job and this new path was not going to bring the best results. And furthermore, I was having a lot more fun selling stuff online and building up the business than I was in my day job. So I knew that while it was probably going to mean some immediate financial kind of losses in terms of income, that, you know, those would quickly be replaced by growing the business faster. And so I dove all in.
Nice. Okay. That is, you know, it's funny because I remember a really similar milestone myself with my own brand, because I took another route and left before I started the brand.
Yeah, you burned the bridge before you.
Yeah. Before yeah, you. Not only did I burn it in that way, but I also moved to a country on the other side of the planet. So I was like, well, you know, burned, buried, drowned, frozen, everything.
I love it.
But yeah, I had a similar milestone when we got to 5 units a day. And I was thinking, you know what? You know, staying in a hostel that costs $13 a night and just eating vegetables because I'm a vegetarian, I could live off this. This is sustainable. I was like, I could do this. And I was like, it meets the bare minimum criteria for me to stay alive. I was like, okay, so that's like the bridge had been burned and I had my little floaty boat. And then it was time for me to start working on building a ship, you know, building it into a ship. So after this first milestone, What was the next major milestone that you experienced after knowing, okay, this is a thing, I see what the path looks like charting out into the future? What was the next milestone that you hit where you thought, okay, I mean, was it the first person that you hired, or was it hitting a certain revenue threshold? What happened next that made you realize that you were, you know, operating on in a whole new world now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chris. I think for me, it was my first home run product. So I used to talk all the time about, you know, and using kind of a baseball analogy. So you've got singles, first base, doubles, you know, second base, triples, third base. And then, of course, you've got the home run. And I think the mistake that some of us make is with every product that we put out to market is trying to hit a home run.
Mm.
And, you know, I didn't discover that mistake until much later on. And the reason is our second product was what I call a home run. It just took off. And, you know, forget about 5 units a day. I mean, within a couple of months after launching it, so this is well within my first year in the business, we were, you know, selling 80 or 90 or 100 units
awesome.
Of that product a day. And so all of a sudden, what that did for me is it just blew up my expectations. And it kind of set me on a mindset of everything or anything being possible. And so this idea that I was just going to have this small kind of supplementary income and just kind of trudge along and live an okay life or a comfortable life, and but still have this really small business was kind of questioned at that point, because I thought, well, maybe I'm setting my sights too low. Maybe I should think bigger and have bigger dreams and aspirations. And so in that way, it was a really positive thing. I remember just shy of a year in the business hitting a point where I said, okay, you know, we are on track here to do $1 million in sales in this first year. And that was a really, really cool thing. The flip side of that, and this was a lesson that I learned over the next year, was that not every hit, not every time at bat is going to be a home run. And that's okay. And so, you know, there's kind of expectation setting in those early years where you are trying to figure out what's possible and kind of how to pull the levers and what each one does. And for me, that was a
positive. Yeah. Now, I don't know if this echoes any of your experience, but one thing that happened to me that I later found quite encouragingly has been a pattern in all of the greats when it comes to my heroes in business. And I'm a big reader of autobiographies and also just business books in general.
Yeah.
Right now I'm on the book by Ray Dalio, the founder of the largest hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater Associates, called Principles, and fantastic book. And the name of it, Principles, gives you an idea of what it really focuses on. But in any case, one thing that I experienced that you just reminded me of was a big humbling, because for me, at least, when I started seeing success, and again, you know, I had a similar experience as you where smash through that initial, oh, okay, I can make this, I can live on this, to, you know, reaching 10, 20 times that, and then thinking, oh, whoa, okay, it's time to shift the mental focus into building this into an empire, and almost starting to think that anything that you touch turns to gold. At least that happened to me. Not that I thought I was invincible or anything, but thinking, oh, okay, so just doing the math, I can 10x this business in 18 months and then 10x it again 18 months later by, like you said, continuing to hit home runs, because that's what I was used to. And I had to get beaten down severely for me to be humbled and realize and to beat the kind of arrogance out of me to realize that risk management is an important part of this. Cash flow management is an important part of this. You can't just go out like a cowboy gunslinging at the hip, you know, thinking that you're going to survive, because eventually if you're doubling down on everything all the time and you're betting the farm every time, eventually you lose the farm. You know, you can only bet on black so many times before it hits red. And if you've put all your chips on black, you're dead. You know, you're broke. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way. Kept doubling down, took out a lot of credit, you know, it with my huge amount of confidence that I would make it back immediately, and took a few blows in order for me to really develop. And I think I'm still developing. I'm not claiming to have it all figured out now, but definitely took a few blows to be able to develop that kind of cool and collected and risk managing attitude that's necessary for long-term success and survival in business through good times and bad.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, Chris. I think business has a way of teaching you the lessons that you need to learn. Unfortunately, sometimes those lessons come at a cost, right? And so I think the thing to focus on or to find comfort in is if you can get to the point where you can start to learn some of these lessons without having to get beat down. And so for me, one of the first big ones was just focus and attention. I have
still learning that, dude. Yeah. Still learning that myself. Still working on that one.
And I think most of us are. I mean, entrepreneurs by our very nature are interesting people. I mean, there's not a lot of people that would be willing to do what we do. And you know, it's funny to be in a room full of people that are not entrepreneurs, because they look at what I do and they think it's crazy, right? It's like, wait a minute, you left a really good job, a good high-paying job, or you could go out tomorrow and find another good high-paying job that would provide you with security and assurance and healthcare and a retirement fund and all of these things, because you thought you could start a business and it might be successful. And that to them is crazy.
But oh, yeah.
It's based on a false narrative, though. You know, I look at what they do as crazy. They show up to the same job every day for the same company, and they feel secure, but that could all go away with the blink of an eye. I bought a house last year, which was an interesting experience. And
oh, congrats.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So anyone that is an entrepreneur or that's self-employed that's gone through that process will know what I mean here. It is absolute hell. And I mean, I hear that buying a house, no matter your occupation, is difficult and stressful. But this was one of the most stressful things I've ever been through. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the whole reason that it's stressful for entrepreneurs is because banks look at us differently than they do everyone else. Okay.
Right. Exactly. I knew where you were going with that.
So they look at what I do as incredibly risky because it could all go away tomorrow. But the guy that's, you know, the assistant manager at Walmart, which there is nothing wrong with that. That's a very fine job. And this is in no way meant to disparage someone like that. But they look at him and they think, oh, my God, what a great income. It's a W-2 income. It's very, very safe, very stable. And my thought is this, right? Like, that guy could make one wrong move, or he could, you know, look at his boss the wrong way, and he could be out of a job tomorrow. Whereas at least I have a little bit more influence and control over my business. Furthermore, if it all should come crumbling down tomorrow, I'll probably spend a week or two and cry about it. And then I'm going to pick myself up off the dirt and brush myself yep. off and go start something else. So
that's exactly right.
It's always, but rather than, you know, just gripe and complain about that, if we understand that, it illustrates an important point, which is that entrepreneurs are different. We think differently. And sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that creates challenges. One of the challenges that it presented for me is that I have a very tough time focusing. And I had to learn the hard way that just because I started one successful business doesn't mean that I can go out and start four more and have them be equally successful.
Yep. 100%, dude. I feel like we've been on parallel paths because I've had the exact same experience. And it's funny because just to build upon what you just said, because I put a lot of thought into this myself too, like, you know, just questioning myself. I think it's important to always question yourself and questioning my own path, because in all honesty, what you said is so correct, that because it seems like it's something that's much more high risk and that doesn't have as much security, but in reality, it's just hidden. Because like you said, you know, your business could completely fail. And in defense of the banks, when they look at the statistics,
oh yeah, for
you know,
sure.
It's they're dead on with that there's, you know, a high percentage of small businesses in their first couple of years fail, and a significant percentage of them, I think more than half, don't make any money or any net income. And you know, those are crazy stats, but the reality that is kind of unseen is that there's a foundation that is built there that is consistent and that does build over time. And it's not the income and it's not the paycheck. It's the foundation of knowledge, skills, resources, and network that you get from being an entrepreneur. Because, you know, I mean, you could call me up someday, Kev, and we could spitball a new business idea and probably get some of the top performers in the space to be included in that, and at least advisors in that. Because right. You know everybody in the industry now at this point. And not only that, but you have the knowledge inside you from having built a successful brand yourself of the roadmap and the blueprint, and also all of the things to watch out for, the pitfalls to avoid, to be able to do that successfully. And having that blueprint in your head, that's a foundation that you didn't have before that makes the probability of your success much higher and the risk profile much lower the further and further you get into your business career. That's honestly, that's one of my favorite things about business. And that's one of the reasons I'm so glad that I made the decision that I did, despite all of the humbling drawbacks that I, or setbacks that I did have to encounter, is that, and the sleepless nights and waking up with panic attacks, you know, and all of this shit,
oh, yeah.
Is that I know for a fact that I learned and grew more in these last 4+ years than I would have in 15 years on the path that I was on. It was like, it's kind of like what I said to you before we started recording, that it's like a time warp. I was like, you know, when I look at myself compared with my friends, it's like the challenges that I encounter on like a day-to-day basis are like once in a quarter events for them. And things that I go through in a month are like once in a year or once in 2 years or even 5 years events for them. And there's like this accelerated growth that you experience that, again, is kind of an unseen benefit when you take this path that is actually lowers the risk, because that's something inside you that nobody can ever take. Nobody can say, okay, I'm taking all of your network away. I'm taking all of your relationships away. Nobody could do that. Nobody could take away the skills and the knowledge that you've gained either. That's all inside you, and that sticks with you forever. And unlike being an athlete, you know, an athlete, the crappy thing about being an athlete is that you peak when you're like 23, you know? And like you and I are far beyond that, but we're still early, early on in our careers in business, because you don't peak in business until you're 60s, basically 50s and 60s. So, you know, we've got a lot more time to capitalize on everything that we've gained in the form of these intangibles, like network, like resources, like knowledge, the experience.
I think that's so true. You know, someone told me early on in my career that people will either pay you for what you do or what you know. Right. And so you'll always get paid more for what you know than what you do. Mm. So an example of that is if you're just starting off and you're a clerk, or, you know, you're washing dishes at a restaurant, or maybe you're an intern or something like that, you don't have any knowledge. Right. And so the only thing they can pay you for is what you do. But over time, over the trajectory of your career, your goal should be to acquire as much knowledge as you can. Which is the most valuable thing, so that at the end of your career, people are paying you not for what you can do, but for instead what you know. And I think, you know, being an entrepreneur, as you said, and getting all of those lessons and experiencing the highs and the lows, the successes and the failure, just banking all of that knowledge is so important, and it's so valuable. It's hard to keep it in that perspective, because when there are tough days, and if you're an entrepreneur, there will be tough days, I can promise you that, you know, it's so easy to lose sight of that and to realize that, hey, I've got a business that's struggling, or, hey, I've got this new product that the launch just totally flopped, or, you know, I've lost my Amazon account, or my largest supplier just went out of business and took all of our inventory with. And there's so many different things that can happen. And, you know, instead of just sticking your head in the sand, you know, it is helpful to remember that you're still gaining knowledge from all of those things. And that knowledge is the most valuable thing you have.
Yep. And it can't be taken away from you.
That's
unless
right.
You catch amnesia or something. But that's something that sticks with you. Okay. So now that you mentioned that one of the biggest lessons you've had to learn was this focus, can you speak to a little bit how that's shifted, how you plan your day, how you plan your priorities, and how you approach business in general? Because you have done a lot. And I can empathize with you. I'm super ADD, and I get excited about everything and definitely chase too many shiny objects. That's something that I've noticed about myself that I'm far from fixing, but I'm definitely on the right path, I feel. But you've had the logistics, you've had the media side with the podcast, Private Label Movement, you've had the brand, you have the speaking. What did this realization and this, you know, self-awareness that you have now about, you know, the priority that you need to place on the ability to focus change about how you run your business or your businesses?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chris. And I think, you know, to start with, it's important to really get honest with yourself, because while us as entrepreneurs, we share a lot of different commonalities, at the same time, we're people, we're human beings, and we're all a little bit different. And specifically what I mean when I say get honest is get honest about the life that you want and why you want to be in business, because we all kind of got here from a different path and we have different things that we want out of this entrepreneurial lifestyle. You know, for me, I wanted to work a little bit less. I wanted to work on things that I was passionate about. I wanted to spend more time with family and friends. I wanted to be able to travel more. Those were kind of the top five things that I wanted out of the business. And those things are really attainable, being a small business owner, being an entrepreneur, but they're not attainable the way I was going about things. So you mentioned some of the things that I did over the past 5 years. You know, I started a successful brand, and then, you know, roughly a year or so later said, well, let's rinse and repeat. Let's, you know, let's do another brand. And then around the same time, through really interesting and captivating conversations like the one we're having here today, I decided to start a podcast. And that quickly grew and became a full-time job all in itself. And then a year or so after that, because of some challenges I had with logistics and fulfillment, I made the classic entrepreneurial mistake of saying, you know, F it, I'll do it myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I quickly found myself in a span of 3 years going from, you know, just starting out as an entrepreneur and having one successful business to having four or five different businesses. I think at one point I had six or seven LLCs.
Wow.
And 30 employees and lots of challenges. And my time was very thin. I was traveling a lot. I was spending a lot of time working. And if you take the five or six things that I rattled off there as things I wanted to get out of business, I basically had none of them. I had less free time than I did when I was in corporate America. Yeah. I had higher stress levels than I'd ever had my entire adult life. I had a lack of ability to spend time with family and friends. I mean, I remember my niece and my nephew saying things like, you know, when are we going to see you again? And all of these things that just, you know, tug at your heart. My stepmom was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was a real struggle to feel like I could be there for my parents during that difficult time. And it was just a lot of things. And the biggest one, though, was that I started to lose passion for what I was doing. Mm. I started to, you know, dread waking up again in the morning. And that was a big red flag for me. And so I had no one to blame but myself. I mean, I had to take a real tough look in the mirror and say, okay, I can't blame my boss for this time. Like, this right. is no one's fault but my own. And really the only way out was to start cutting and to start really focusing. And what I decided is that I'd rather do one thing really, really well and instead of four or five things, you know, kind of half-assed. So I think for me today, it starts with focus and just really defining what success means and what you want to get out of things. I'm working less today than I have in quite a while. And
nice.
You know, but making about the same or even a little better money than I was, you know, with 30 employees and three different or four different companies that I was running. And I've gained back the ability to travel and spend more time with those that are important to me. There's still rough days, though. It's not a walk in the park. I had kind of created such a mess, Chris, that it's taken these last 18 months or so to kind of clean that up. And I feel like we're in a good place now.
Yeah. And I know that our mutual friend, John, is now running Private Label Movement. And I was on the first event that he hosted through it.
Yeah.
And it was actually pretty exciting to see that because we've known John through that mastermind that we were in for years as well. And, you know, he had a lot of passion for it too. So it must have been pretty gratifying for you to have the self-awareness to say, hey, I can't do everything well. Let me pass this, you know, thing that I've actually been really passionate about in this community that I, you know, I've cultivated over all this time to somebody who is equally passionate and equally able to cultivate it and allow it to grow.
It was, you know, it was important to me that if it was going to continue to serve people, and that was
right.
by far, that was the toughest thing to walk away from, you know.
I bet. Yeah. Because that's community.
It is. And, you know, it opened a lot of doors for me and allowed me to meet a lot of people. And many of them I'm still close with today. And so I'm incredibly grateful for the time that I had doing the show and all of those things. And it's something I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss it.
Okay. So when you decided to cut these things away, cut out some of the businesses, cut out some of the things that were distracting your time, what did you decide to focus on and why? How did you make that decision and what did you end up focusing on?
So I went back to the beginning. I went back to baby steps and said, I'm going to just be a brand owner at this point. So I've got two brands and they were suffering because of a lack of focus on my part. And so I said, I'm going to breathe some new life into them and try to get back, not just to where we were when things started to decline a little bit, but to surpass that and really be intentional about not just throwing a product out into the market and hoping it would be successful, but cultivating a community and getting to know our customers and owning that relationship with the customer and being accountable for the interactions and the experience that they have, and kind of do business in a more meaningful way. And so that was the goal. And the side step from that was to also get back to the point where I could run the business from anywhere, from a laptop. And so that was kind of my barometer, Chris. I knew that I would kind of have achieved that goal if the business got back to where I could run it remotely and have a lot less stress.
So where is that barometer at now?
It's pretty much there. You know, like I said a minute ago, like I think sometimes the results that we experience in business are from the actions that we've taken, not yesterday or not last week, but months ago or even a year or so ago. And so for mm-hmm. me, we're still, you know, making a lot of progress, but I feel good about, you know, where we're at, and certainly good about the plan moving forward. And really, really happy with where things are headed.
Awesome. Right on, man. Well, listen, we're close to the end of the episode here, but just to wrap up, I just want to ask for the audience, and I think I might know what you're going to say, maybe not though, but for everyone listening, you know, if you were to go back and you were starting all over again, would you start today, you know, not in 2014, but in today's environment, knowing what you know today, what would you do differently? And this could be as detailed as, you know, the business model, whether you would use Amazon or your own site, or instead of doing physical products, do digital products or whatever. What would be different if you had to start from scratch? If Kevin Reiser was starting a business and, you know, the slate was wiped clean.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a little bit difficult to answer. And the reason I say that is that the easy answer, or the quick answer, probably the honest answer, if I'm completely honest, is that I would have learned that lesson about focus much earlier, so that I wouldn't have had to experience some of the pain of getting spread too thin or of taking on too much. But the reason I say it's difficult is that that also would have had me miss out on some amazing things. You know, had I never started a podcast, then I wouldn't have met some incredible people and had some incredible experiences with guests and with the audience alike. And so had I never, you know, started a fulfillment company, I wouldn't have had the experience of that and learning from some of those pitfalls and some of the successes we had as well. So it's with that caveat that I say, certainly I've learned those lessons, and if I had the opportunity to do it over again, I would skip that, because no one wants to just keep beating your head up against the wall. Eventually it starts to hurt. But I look back not with a grudge or not with disappointment that I had those experiences, but instead with gratitude. And I focus on the lessons that they taught me and try to carry those forward today.
Very cool. Okay. And that's actually what I thought you were going to say. Awesome. So you would, despite the business model or the marketplace or whatever, the one thing that you would do is focus on growing the thing that you were growing, rather than trying to jump to the next step too quickly.
Absolutely. You know, get out a blank sheet of paper, write down what you want to get out of this thing, and find out what it's going to make to take that happen, and really focus on that.
Excellent. Right on, Kev. Well, thank you for coming on. And also, I'm just glad. One of my favorite parts about being the host of this podcast is just having an excuse to talk to people that I want to talk to. And I'm really glad that you and I got a chance to catch up, you know, and this was that excuse for us to be able to chat and hang digitally for a little while.
Thank you, my friend. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Talk to you soon, Kev. And that's it, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode with my buddy Kevin Reiser. Stick around until the next episode. We have a really exciting one coming up for you that I know you guys are going to love. And if you wouldn't mind, if you got any bit of value out of that, I would really appreciate it if you told us what it is. Whether you're listening on Anchor or Stitcher or iTunes, or you just want to shoot back an email if you were emailed this episode, let us know what you liked about it, because I read every one of these comments and I take your feedback seriously and want to make content that's actually valuable to you guys. So if you say, hey, we want more tactical, we want more strategic stuff, or you say, hey, we love the storytelling, we want to hear more of that, let me know. You have to make your voice heard, otherwise nothing will change. So, and also hit that 5-star rating on Anchor, iTunes, or Stitcher, whatever other weird esoteric podcast app you use. And I'll see you guys next time.